Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Check one, check two, what you gonna do? JP and Astaire coming at you. What? Bow!
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, an official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it's one of the oldest independent publications in the United States. We distribute free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Endless Indulgence charity show, going back into our archives with an interview with Anthony Bourdain, doing the Daily Calendar Weekly Rundown with editorial assistant Esther Moronio, hearing new music from I'm Designer and Jimmy Hackup, and we'll also take a look at the upcoming Beehive Bazaar in Provo. Endless Indulgence is a vintage-style clothing boutique that opened in October of 2011. They feature designer lines from Betty Page, Audrey Kay, Steady Clothing, and Kara Linden Jewelry. And this week, Endless Indulgence is doing charity work for Toys for Tots and the Utah Food Bank. Slug writer Megan Kennedy recently interviewed shop owner Carrie Vondras about the store and their charity drive.
So have you always been interested in vintage fashion, or did that kind of happen one day for you?
No, it was funny. My husband was looking back at my high school graduation picture, which was back in the 80s, so I am dating myself. Back in the 80s, and I had on what would be considered back then a 1950s retro dress for my graduation. So, I mean, I've always tended towards that era. Just like the class of it, yeah, it's gorgeous. It was beautiful back then, and it's even prettier now. It's been a whole life thing. We finally just decided to take a check off the bucket list and open a store and bring all this fabulous fashion to Utah. It's big everywhere else, but I know we have a lot of underground gals that are going to be thrilled when they know that we're here.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, in this economy, it's awesome to see a small business like this opening up, especially for such a niche market. Like, it's got to be a big risk. So I just want to know, like, what made you take the leap? How did you guys come about opening the shop?
It was more of a, if I don't do it now, I'm going to chicken out and I'm never going to do it. My husband and I do car shows. I have a 1961 convertible Volkswagen that's completely restored. A lot of the guys around here used to see me drive her around. Her name's Doris. And it was just, we did the car show circuit. We go to Viva Las Vegas every Easter. We just kind of decided, you know, I'll be honest, I'm pushing my 50s, and it's to the point where if I'm not going to do it now, it's just not going to happen. Michelle Nichols, which owns Vintage Cupcakes Company, she's a big patron of ours. She loves our dresses. She actually offered for us to come in and use the back half of her shop. And so basically, we're just trying to be smart businesswomen. I take over a portion of the rent, and we just get an incredible shop. And you know, you can come in, get something sweet, come in the back, get something sweet for your body. So it was really a blessing that it happened the way it did. Michelle is like awesome and wonderful to work with and work for. So
how long have you guys been open, and would you say, like, how's your business doing? Are you guys seeing more and more people coming in?
We've been, October 1 was when we opened our doors, and as far as picking up big time, as a matter of fact, the Slick Shifters, the rockabilly band, came in night before last.
Wonderful.
Surprised me. Dennis came in. He was awesome and talked to me before about possibly us dressing the guys, because we carry rock steady clothing for men. We are the only retailer in the state that carries them. Really? I confirmed that with my girl Katie at Rocksteady in California. So yeah, next thing I know, Tuesday night, here comes the whole band walking in, and the backup singers, the gals, are supposed to be coming in on Monday. But yeah, we ended up dressing them. So yeah, it's really picking up. A lot of the underground gals are really glad to see that, you know, they can come into a shop and not have to order online, in the hopes that it fits when it gets to the
right.
house.
That's always, especially with vintage style clothes where they fit so differently, it seems like it'd be a big risk.
Right, and like I tell the gals, the fact of the matter is, one size chart does not fit all of us.
Absolutely.
It's hard to know where to turn when every road before heading nowhere. Oh, I best find my way.
So what would you say, what are the staples of vintage wardrobe? Like, say I'm coming in and I don't know anything about it. What do I absolutely have to have to start?
Oh, gosh, the staples. A great dress. And I tell girls, don't look at the size on the dress. A great dress that fits your body. And that's what I love about the 40s and 50s look, is it fits the bust line. It fits the waistline. If you want to go with the pencil, you can. If not, go with the flare if you feel more comfortable with the flare. So really and truly, a great staple dress, a day dress and an evening dress. Always the flowers in the hair look beautiful. And a great clutch handbag. And I'll tell you, there's lots of ways to get if you want to do authentic vintage, if you're a purist, as they call it. If not, the reproductions, they're really taking a great cue. I'm really excited with Pan Am, the TV show that's come out.
Oh, right.
We do carry Pan Am bags, the ones from the TV show. We are almost sold out of them. But watch that show. I watch it. I love the show. But more than anything, I love looking at the styles. In February, we go down for our spring and summer buy. And I know that the designers are just going haywire, sketching and drawing and, you know, getting ready for everything that we're gonna be able to see in the spring and summer. So I think it's gonna be even better than it has been in the past, just because of Pan Am's, the TV show being on and how popular it's gotten.
Awesome, that's wonderful. What's your favorite item in your shop? I guess right now, at least, since you get such a new stocker.
You know what? I have a little dress right there. It's a Bernie Dexter, limited piece leopard dress that right now is, that's mine right there. I just have her in here so I can look at her all the time. So yeah, that and some, our vintage jewelry, I'm really, really thrilled about. And I have to tell you, my girlfriend Tiffany Everett, that lives down in Sandy, she finds the authentic vintage cat eye glasses.
Oh, nice.
That are absolutely stunning. They just don't make them like that anymore. And if they do, you can't afford them.
Right.
She finds them. She has the lenses taken out because most of her prescription. She has high-end sunglass lenses put in. So the girls are ready to be put on your face and walk out the door. And they are absolutely fabulous. So those are two of my favorite pieces. Anything leopard is always good.
Yeah.
but yeah, the sunglasses are pretty amazing.
Awesome.
I was hard to recognize. You know, I thought I had a good thing, but that one turned out bad. I was looking over all the things that I thought I had.
So tell me about the charity event going on December 3rd. Give us a little bit of background.
So excited about
that. It's the Bar Deluxe down in Salt Lake, right?
Bar Deluxe, yep.
Yeah, so tell me about
666
that.
666 South State, I believe is their address. Hit me up, Ashley Murray. Very thrilled to tell you that she's not only my photographer, she's also a very close girlfriend. She has worked her fingers to the bone to get everybody on board for this event. And when I say everybody, endless indulgence, we will be doing a fashion show. The Voodoo Darlings have donated a couple of numbers.
Wonderful.
So they're going to be performing, as well as we are going to have a pinup contest.
Oh, that's awesome.
The gals can register at pinmeuputah.com. Mm-hmm. And then the highlight of the evening is going to be, we have three bands playing, the Tuxedo Tramps, the Blue Bombers, and then my favorite, obviously, is going to be seeing the Slick Shifters on stage. We're going to have a fun-filled evening going from 6 o'clock till the wee hours.
Wonderful.
Lots of rockabilly, lots of pinup. You know, I tell everybody, come out. If you haven't seen the scene, you got to come check it out, because it's one of, in my opinion, being in this scene, it's one of the most non-judgmental, fun. Everybody is just absolutely amazing in it. We've just had an absolute blast with the car club people, with the pinup people. The event itself, all proceeds will be going to benefit Utah Food Bank, as well as Toys for Tots. So we are asking people if you could bring an unwrapped new toy. We'll have the box there to help out. And quite frankly, in this economy, it hasn't been really picking up, so people need more help than ever.
Yeah, one toy is not a big deal.
Go pick up a Barbie doll. Go pick up, you know, some Hot Wheels.
Yeah.
So, you know, just make a kid happy. And then obviously the Utah Food Bank. They've been saying they need help for quite a while. So we're really hoping that the rockabilly and pinup community can do our part to help out. And Ashley Marie has just done an astounding job putting all this together. It's been a one-man band, and she has been it. So, yeah.
So kudos to her. How can people, is there any way they can volunteer? Like, if you guys need any more help, if anybody wants to help out with the event?
Yeah, I mean, we would love to have anybody that would love to donate prizes, for the pinup contest, that kind of thing. But if you just want to pick up a case of food, pick up a case of canned food and bring it in and drop it off, that would be fabulous. Any donations are appreciated. It doesn't matter how big or small. And everybody says that, but it really is the honest to God truth.
Yeah.
Well, my eyes just might shine before too long.
You can take part in the charity event Saturday, December 3rd at Bar Deluxe, featuring music from Voodoo Darlings, Tuxedo Tramps, Slick Shifters, and Blue Moon Bombers. There's also going to be a mini fashion show with burlesque dancing and a pinup contest, too. For more info on the show and the shop, search for Endless Indulgence on Facebook.
Now let me feel good for a while. It was you.
Jimmy Hackup is the latest project from Scott Toxic, a former and sometimes current member of Electric Pubes, Baby Bam Bam Bumpkin, Ice Cherry, and Wiley Deadskin. He's been recognized as a creator of the local Art Faux movement, most noted for performing in giant costumes with extravagant stage shows, and for releasing a 30-minute single-track album called 100% Illegal. Toxic composes unique sound collages mixed with light shows and dancing during live gigs. Here's a snippet from the 30-minute long album called Knock Your Teeth Out. For more info on the project, search for Scott Toxic on both Facebook and MySpace. Anthony Bourdain is a chef well known for his work in New York City restaurants since the 70s. He's also a talented writer, having burst into the literary world with Kitchen Confidential back in the year 2000. His gonzo take on the culinary world received notice from the early 2000s, and his career as a food travel show host began. For the last 7 years, he's hosted No Reservations on the Travel Channel and has penned other autobiographical tomes like Medium Raw. His new Travel Channel show, The Layover, started in November, and here's Slug's writer James Bennett with Bourdain in April of 2010.
Give me, give me, give me! 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 Now, I mentioned I work for a magazine called Slug, and we're primarily a music magazine, though we've added a food feature in the last couple of years, but I think I've seen somewhere you wearing a Dead Boys t-shirt, and so, you know, being a music magazine at heart, I mean, were you involved much with the New York City, you know, late 70s punk stuff?
I mean, I was a fan.
Okay.
I mean, I was a huge fan, I mean, during that time. I mean, I was lucky enough to be around and lucky enough to be going to, you know, the clubs where they were playing, and I mean, I obviously have a deep and lasting love for that. Those few brief years, a lot of those bands were playing. But I mean, I was never a musician or anything like
that. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, what are some bands that stand out, bands that maybe still you still listen to today?
Richard Hell and the Voidoids.
Awesome. Awesome.
Amazing. Television, Cover Ramones, of course. You know, those really stick out.
Okay.
Bush Tetras, Dead Boys, obviously.
Okay.
You know, at least one song. I mean, you know, that the Sonic Reducer is, you know, a timeless classic.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. Yeah, I'll have to agree with you there. Now,
you know, of course, I was a Velvet fan and a huge, huge Iggy Pop fan. He was sort of the, you know, I go back a ways, so, you know,
yeah.
I remember how much, you know, what an extraordinary bit in the face to, you know, what, I mean, you know, the first Stooges album came out in 1969, this anti-social masterpiece, you know,
yeah,
pretty much proclaimed, you know, any, you know, hippiedom dead, you know, from that moment on. And, you know, if you just, you need only look at the how awful and saccharine and bloated rock and roll was in 72, and then you look at what some other people were doing and around that time, even, you know, before punk. You know,
yeah.
It makes bands like The Dolls and Velvet and Iggy and MC5, you know, all the more extraordinary.
Okay. Now, what do you think of what Iggy's doing these days? You know, Reunited Stooges, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I think any day that Iggy Pop could wake up in the morning, you know, healthy, alive, and make a living in America or anywhere else is a good day for humanity, you know. It pleases me no end that he's alive, apparently healthy, and making money. No, he deserves it.
God, that's a fantastic answer. Now, with I mean, you kind of came out of the gate with Kitchen Confidential, you know, over a decade ago. Pulled back the curtain to show people what was really going on in these fancy kitchens, and you became, you know, famous for it. It was wildly popular. Why do you think it struck such a chord?
I really don't know. I don't know, and I don't try too hard to figure it out. I was only able to write that book in the first place because I didn't think anyone was going to read it. You know?
Okay.
So I'm really kind of clinging to the not giving a shit as a business model has been very good to me.
Okay. Okay.
And I worry that if I start thinking about who will actually read this book or what their expectations are, that would be counterproductive. I mean, I don't know why at that particular time I wrote it with a tiny subculture of restaurant industry people in New York in mind. You know, I just wanted to amuse and entertain them with a book that was funny and true and not bullshit. I really didn't think anyone outside of the tri-state area in New York was going to read it. So it really came, no one was more surprised than me that it was such a success, and it continues to sell. And it clearly hooked into something, but I don't know what. I mean, I really don't know.
Okay.
I mean, no one cared about cooks and chefs 20 years ago, and now everyone cares, seems to care.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it happened.
Oh, of course.
Kitchen Confidential is a success, and I'm glad that chefs are stars now. I just, for the life of me, don't really understand why.
Okay. Do you feel responsible at all for, like, the Food Network and some of the absolute shit that gets slung around there as a result?
I think a Food Network, even at its worst, is probably a force for good in the world. I mean, I think there's no question, but your first real monster celebrity chef, a guy who did enormous, you know, had a lot to do with elevating the whole notion of a chef, is Emeril. You know, whatever I may have thought of his shows, you got to hand it to him. You got to give props to those that deserve it. And I think Food Network, it's an enormous success story. I may hate most of their shows.
Okay.
But it's probably good for me personally, and it's probably good for the restaurant industry and for chefs and the profession of chefs. You wouldn't know it watching the network. It increases interest, I think, in cooking and expectations is probably a win for the good guys in the long run.
All right, that's a really a zen outlook.
I can't bear to watch. I mean, I just want to gap my eyes out with flaming skewers.
And I won't make you get specific as to who, but I have, I have the shows that I can't watch, and I imagine they're probably similar.
Just Google, I advise everybody, Google Sandra Lee and Kwanzaa Cake, and behold, it's just absolutely the most unbelievable.
No, I've actually seen video. That with the, with the applesauce in the middle and fucking corn nuts on it. Now, you mentioned that you've been through our airport before, but not really visited Salt Lake. Are you familiar at all with kind of Mormon food traditions?
I think you drink a lot of Coca-Cola, right? Not a lot of liquor, right?
Yeah, not a lot of liquor. Not even a whole lot of Coke, depending on who the who's interpreting the commandments. Let me throw some traditional Mormon dishes at you and just kind of get your reaction. Okay, so the first one here is called funeral potatoes. It's a kind of it gets its name because it's the dish that's always served at a funeral, but it's made from hash browns mixed with sour cream, cheddar, cream of chicken soup, usually topped with cornflakes and baked in an oven. What do you think?
Sounds like, morally wrong, possibly evil, but very likely delicious.
Okay.
I can't believe, you sure you aren't like really stoned out there? Because that's like a real, that sounds like some stoner delight.
Well,
some stoned college student thought that one up.
What about a version of tiramisu, but made with like fake coffee, like Pero or Postum, before they stopped making Postum?
Well, I'm probably opposed to that in principle.
Okay.
I don't like the sound of that one, Tim.
Right. Now, we actually have some pretty large immigrant populations within Utah. Pacific Islanders make up a pretty big portion of citizenship here in Salt Lake. They eat a lot of spam. Yeah, and so the idea...
Like a heart attack. You must be like, from the dishes you're telling me about so far, and your Pacific Islander population, you must be like the heart problems capital of the U.S. or way up there.
Yeah, I think that might be one reason why we have a really nice heart-centric hospital up on the hill, is because everyone's eating all this slop. Okay, so the last two here, one comes from like the Greek tradition that we have also in Salt Lake. What about a cheeseburger topped with pastrami? Any thoughts on that?
I'm pretty sure God is against it.
if you get a chance, man, if you get a chance, I can recommend a couple of places here that do a pretty good job on it. But
as a New Yorker, that's I'm uncomfortable with that, man. That's criminal. I believe there's a statute against it in New York. Criminal misuse of pastrami.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
And then kind of the final quintessential Mormon dish would be a dessert made from the lime flavored Jell-O. With shredded carrots mixed in.
Man, you're scaring me. I mean, you're really frightening me.
Well, this kind of comes from the 1950s tradition of using gelatin kind of in the aspic style.
Yeah, listen, I grew up eating that crap too. I mean, all those Jell-O desserts, back in like the late 50s and 60s. But dude, it's 2010. Put down the Jell-O. Step away from the Jell-O mold. Oh man.
All right, man.
I don't know whether I'm frightened or intrigued. I mean, this might be a good, it might be a good show.
For more information on Bourdain's shows, check out TravelChannel.com. And to read the piece on Bourdain, visit our May 2010 issue in the archives at slugmag.com. Hey, Esther, how you doing?
Good, how are you today?
I'm great, thanks. We're sitting here with Ms. Maronio, editorial assistant here at Slug Magazine, also a frequent contributor to our daily calendar rundown. We do it every podcast, and we talk about upcoming events for the week, and this is going to be a good week, as usual, from the end of November into December, bridging the gap with some really exciting
well, metal events mainly.
I wouldn't say mainly. There's one.
Well, everything's pretty metal to me today. I'm having a metal Monday. I don't know.
Yes, so we're starting the week off with Mayhem, Keep of Callison, Hate, and Abigail Williams, The Complex. Should be a pretty big show. Complex is a very large venue.
You don't sound like you're going to go to that show.
I'm not super into metal, but we have a lot of people in the office that are into metal. We even have the Napalm Flesh metal blog.
Those guys will probably write about it. Yeah.
Probably. Check out Napalm Flesh.
There is an event that's coming up that you probably will want to go to. Friday, December 2nd, Beats Antique Show at the Depot. I know how into that kind of music you are. And belly dancing. No? That's me then. I'm going to go, actually. Have you heard about Beats Antique, actually?
No.
They're very interesting. There's a heavy emphasis on dance. It was founded by a dancer. And when I went most recently, impressed is a good word for it. It's a good show.
So it's belly dancing?
Yeah. And some, I don't know, burner music, some have described it as. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, I don't know if it's going to be your cup of tea, but I'm going to check it out. And of course, on Friday, what happens? It's the most exciting day of the month.
Slug Magazine! Hit stands, any place cool.
And online as well. You can go to slugmag.com if you're listening to this on the internet and you're not in Utah. Believe it or not, there are people that listen outside of Salt Lake City to this podcast.
What?
Such a thing
exists.
We're
the coolest podcasts west of the Mississippi.
You just created our bumper sticker for the year. Good job. Thank you. Saturday, December 3rd, Kid Rock, Ty Stone will be at Saltaire. And then in the evening, WTF, which is not what it sounds like. There's going to be an SB Dance fundraiser at Rose Wagner.
Wagner.
Wine, Theater, and Food is what that stands for, by the way, in case you were wondering.
I like all three of those things.
And I believe it's Wagner, not pronounced like the composer. And what's coming up over the weekend?
Ooh, Craft Sabbath is on Sunday, December 4th. It's at the public library, the main branch, and it goes from 12 to 5. Yeah, and it's actually one of my favorite events. There's a bunch of like local artists and crafters that go, and you can buy really awesome stuff.
You've been before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What have you purchased at the Craft Sabbath?
I have this really cool heart that's like made out of plastic toys. Parts of plastic toys put together and then spray painted to look metallic, and it's sitting on my bookshelf. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. And what happens the day after that at Kilby?
It's Suede Head at Kilby Court, and we actually have a really awesome article written by Gavin Hoffman in our December issue, so check that out to find out more about the band. One of the members is actually a Salt Lake local.
I will do that. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. And also, folks, if you want to find out more daily calendar events, I just call them folks. That makes me think they're like 60 to 80. We've got a very good geriatric audience. All right, elderly people that listen to the show. You can download our app if you know what an app is for an iPhone, or you can visit our website, slugmag.com. There's a little graph there about the daily calendar events. Best resource in town, I'd say, for getting a really quick look at all the day's events and the upcoming events.
I would agree.
You have to. You have to. Well, thanks again, Esther.
Thank you.
I'm Designer is an atmospheric rock band from Provo featuring Robert George on guitar and vocals, Todd Allred on bass, and Jeff Spencer on drums. The outfit formed in late 2010, and their strong DIY efforts have been paying off, having recently recorded and completed their debut EP over the summer of 2011. Here's 27 from that EP.
Yeah.
The band is going to be playing on Park City Television's Mountain Views on December 15th. For more info on the group and to download the entire EP, check them out at imdesignermusic.com. The Beehive Bazaar formed back in 2004 in Provo when a group of craft handy moms started selling goods from their houses. The event has grown to over 50 craftspeople from around the Wasatch Front for a biannual three-day event. Slug writer Mariah Mellis recently interviewed organizers Noelle Olfen and Dwayne and Molly Call.
Tell me a little bit about how the Beehive Bazaar started.
We started about 8 years ago now. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it's
our 16th show.
Yeah, because we do it twice a year. The first one was in a house. It was in Molly and Dwayne's house. They just vacated, and it was a plug for trying to get it rented, and then also just a great downtown location for having a show.
And so over the years, did it stay in a home for a couple of years, or how was that first show? How many artists?
Well, it's funny. It was completely, family and friends. It was
And neighbors.
Yeah. Remove all the furniture, move all the art in, so like six or seven people, and it was more like just a party, like almost like Tupperware party. Hey, come on over, have some hors d'oeuvres, shop a little, share a little, chit chat a lot. And then over the years it kept getting a little larger, like, oh, we moved it from that house to my parents' house.
There was
like,
more interest space. And more interested in people, you know, people that wanted to come.
And it was a word of mouth kind of organic. So suddenly, gosh, more people said, oh, I do some stuff too. Is there any room for me? So it moved a couple years later to a different house, and then it moved from there to a larger venue. So it's kind of now hit a steady state where we feel like we've hit the right model, saying, wow, about 50 vendors, and we kind of know the size and space that we need to be in to facilitate that.
That's great. Now, and you guys were at Thanksgiving Point for one of the seasons, correct? How was that?
That was great. It was our biggest show, and we had the most vendors there. We started it here in Provo, and I think it was one of those things, our people wanted it back here. And so it was great there. It was really, really fun, and it was kind of nice because the Salt Lake people could come down and the Provo people could come up. But I think we wanted to bring it back.
Nice, because it's the Beehive Bazaar's home has been at the Women's Center here right off from the university. Yeah. So, and you were in that building for how long?
Probably did 4 years there.
Mm-hmm. And that seemed kind of organic because it's mostly run by women in a women's center. The building's kind of funky, but
it's funky.
But
it fit.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but you guys are all kind of funky, you know. Take the old and the new and make it, you know, repurpose it and make it fun and a little bit of both. You were saying earlier, Dwayne, that 50 artists seems to be kind of the magic number because you get too many and it's hard to get through them all and you kind of get repetition. So how do you find vendors? How do you find your arts or your crafters?
Well, at this point, kind of the word is out that Beehive Bazaar is twice a year and it's, you know, different artists and crafters, you know, want to give it a shot and see if they fit in and be accepted. And so we have quite a few people apply now, and most people are local, you know, from Utah, occasionally California and Idaho and here and there, but most people are local artists. What I love about Beehive Bazaar is that it's not necessarily somebody who's on the craft fair circuit, you know, it's somebody who's, you know, maybe they're a student or they love doing art, but they also have a full-time job. And so they, you know, just kind of put themselves out there for this show. And so it's this.
Which always makes it interesting because it's always new people. It's not just the ones doing the shows every time.
Yeah.
But maybe a mom who just is like, oh my gosh, has so much talent and loves to paint and doesn't have an opportunity to like do all the shows because she's busy. And so it's great to go, oh, I can do one show. And we love it because we love to have new every time. Not every single person, because we do have some of our veteran, which is nice because then people come back for them.
Yeah, so you get this preview or just, you know, and a lot of people have actually gone on from Beehive Bazaar to do amazing things and
be very successful. And you're like, oh, it's fun to think. Big and famous now.
They started out, you know, started out with Beehive Bazaar.
So. Nice. They started crafting in their room, just like
that's
you guys started having a Beehive Bazaar in one room
and
moved on from there. That's great.
And there's also a trick to that 50, something we've always focused on saying, how do you keep something familiar and then something that's new and exciting? So really, if you look at that roster, usually about half of those are vets. They've been here before, you know, either for several shows or many shows. And then we try and bring in, you know, 25 more that are new that you've never seen before. Because there's that air of saying, you want the familiarity, so when you walk and say, oh, there's so-and-so, and you talk to each other and you catch up and you see things that you can refer friends, like, oh, you've got to go and see this. But then also, like, every other thing's a surprise, like, oh my gosh, I've never seen that before.
Cause fate delayed the big parade. It's really a wonder that I've stayed without you.
What is one of your favorite vendors from the past? Is there one thing that when they brought their stuff in, you're like, I'm buying it now before anybody else has a chance to?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There. Well, what comes to mind, maybe different for you guys, but I know you have some of her stuff too. Heidi Blackwelder. And she did...
This was a long time ago too.
Well, yeah, 3 or 4 years. And yeah. She's got little kids and I know she's really busy, but she's a graphic designer. Mm-hmm. And she does... this amazing papier mâché. So we have these papier mâché little deer that she did one Christmas. Nice. That are like pink and some are brown and they have these big giant heads and they're hilarious. And then she did some other like piñata type thing on a stick and something about it. I mean, I hadn't seen it anywhere else and it was really cool.
We always enjoy a little of the crazy. A little of that. Yeah, we've had good, we've had some good veterans. Kanani Hayes is with Vinylicious and just, she does a really tight job of everything is just amazing. And she does like makeup bags and journals and what does she do? Pillows.
Baby bibs and stockings.
I mean, it's just, it's really tight. And
or Dallas. Hello, Dallas from SLC.
Yep, she's blows us.
One of my favorite things is, for honest to goodness, is watching Dallas and her mom show up to set up for the show.
And set up, they have like this whole, like,
oh, it's amazing.
Just amazing, like, props and backdrop. And it's,
and the attention to detail, you pick up any of Dallas's goods, and these little cutest, teeniest, tiniest things with the detail is just immaculate.
Yeah.
And they're the most adorable thing. And a whole wall of
and
it.
And one of a kind.
She and her mother come down and set the whole thing up every time. And it's almost just fun to watch that just because the way they work together as a team.
Yeah. Her business is called Easily Amused. And she does fabric, felt, but always tons of detail with sequins and buttons and embroidery and absolutely blow your mind.
You know, like Dallas, you should be charging like 5 times what you are for that. Yeah, it's like your work is so amazing.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I feel like everything was very reasonably priced. One of my favorite pieces is a bee necklace, and every time I wear it, I get a compliment on it. People are just over the moon for it, and so I get to say I got my bee from the Beehive Bazaar. But I want to say I spent less than $15 on that thing. And, you know, just really pretty and unique and just felt like I got a find. I think that's kind of the best part about the Beehive Bazaar is you go down and because it is one of a kind, you know that not everybody in Salt Lake or Provo or wherever is going to be wearing these things. Yeah. So it's definitely worth the trek down to from wherever you are to come and see it and find your one of a kind gifts and maybe a little something for yourself.
That's right.
So then you're moving to a new location and where will that be and how will we find it? Because as you know, I am not good at finding directions in Provo. So
this one is easy and it's fantastic. It's on the corner of University Avenue and Center Street in Provo. If you're coming down from Salt Lake, you whoop right over the border.
Okay.
Over the border. And then
and you get off at the Center Street.
You take the Center Street exit. Go down
Provo
to University.
Center Street exit.
Yes, Provo Center Street exit. And you go down to University Avenue. It's right on the corner. And it's neat because it's really the old center of town. Oh. And so it's in a building that's being renovated by a fine gentleman, Richard, and his wife, Dee. And it's called the Bell Room. And they've just done a beautiful job of restoring back a lot of the original beauty of the building, which we love. Because seeing that, you know, keeping the culture as supporting
windows. I think it'll just be a good location for people are walking by, driving by, you know, just, I don't know, light up the downtown.
And it sounds like cackle, crackle, bling, bang, buzz, crush, whir, clang,
The Beehive Bazaar runs from December 8th to the 9th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and December 10th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. For more info on the event and to check out all the artists who will be on display, you can visit their website over at thebeehivebazaar.com. Thanks for listening to another episode of Soundwaves from the Underground. For more info about all the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, visit slugmag.com. And if you have any questions or comments or an angry thought or two, you can send us an email at soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our voicemail line at 858-233-9324. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown, with associate producers Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, Jeanette D. Moses, and Jonathan Paxton. Our show's theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Make sure to join us next week as we explore the Salty Cricket Collective, talk local holiday shopping with Buy Local First, and preview the Help Portrait from the SLC Photo Collective.